Welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I am your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS or alternatively at HP Basketball. Probably not doing much the next couple of days because I have to catch up on family time because my wife's been home with two kids for 4 days. Joining me is James Herbert. He is at Outside the NBA on Twitter. James, I am inside Summer League. I've been inside Summer League. I'm headed home today. Very nice trip. Always good to see everyone in Vegas. Saw some good prospects. But it does look like Carmelo Anthony might be in Houston soon.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of seems inevitable. Like, all the noise about the Cavs has quieted down. There have been all these reports that that's where he wants to play, and he's okay playing with D'Antoni again. And, I mean, I don't know how deep we should go into this, because we sort of argued a little bit about his fit there again. But it certainly seems that the teams are motivated to get this done. The weird thing is I'm not sure what kind of deal makes sense, because it sounds like it's like the latest thing is they're trying to make it a four-team deal. I assume the Knicks have no interest in Ryan Anderson because they want young players and picks and the like. But I don't see like a clear, easy way to facilitate this. Like Houston, I don't think is going to give up Gordon or Ariza or Capella, any of their key players, really, aside from Anderson.
Yeah, and there's a lot of concern about losing Anderson because of the way that he spaces the floor. They also don't want to lose Gordon, though, because he's basically the third guard, and that's like a perfect fit. Like, lineups with Chris Paul and Eric Gordon are still going to destroy worlds in very significant ways, which allows you to rest Harden a little bit more. So you don't want to get rid of Gordon. So you're going to lose Anderson probably because he's a forward, and he seems expendable, but his pure spacing is a little bit different, and he's so non-ball dependent that he does a lot for their ability to create the kind of space that Harden needs to operate. That's part of it, is like, if Melo's hanging out in the mid-range, like, this is a big question. This is, like, a legitimately big question, is whether or not those guys are going to adapt Morey ball. Because if they're just like, well, no, like, yeah, we'll take a lot of threes, but, I mean, you know, I'll still stand here, because that's where I have stood for my entire career. That's problematic because it reduces the amount of space that Harden has. Like, you have to clear out to the three-point line. That's what makes them dangerous. Like, the Rockets, quite honestly, like, last season everyone picked up on this. There were several pieces. They spotted up several feet behind the three-point line. Like, they spaced out to 35 in order to create the kind of, and it worked. They're able to shoot from there. And it created the kind of space that they need. Like, I don't see, like, Melo's never been like, oh, man, can you believe how deep he shot that from? Like, if he shoots threes, like, he shoots them on the line. And it's just, a lot of it is just about, you know, those kind of mechanisms of comfort and spacing. And you can say, well, he can adapt to it. He can. Will he? Like, this continues to be my question, is I don't understand why everyone is assuming that a player that has never adapted to anything he's been asked to do is all of a sudden going to adapt. I don't get this. For a coach that he's already not adapted to. And, you know, even if they're on better terms, that doesn't mean that he's going to make the changes necessary. Which means, like, what could happen is that D'Antoni could be like, look, I get it. You're a superstar. No problem. Like, we'll just slide it in and make things into what you need. Like, we'll fix it. But does that make the Rockets better? Like, if they acquiesce to Melo, does that make them better? I don't think it does. Like, I don't think that they need Carmelo Anthony, and I don't really understand why they're pursuing this trade.
I think fundamentally D'Antoni is not going to budge on what he wants. He's not going to be okay with the ball stopping every few seconds. And that's the risk here, is adding Chris Paul is one thing. You can probably get him to be a great off-the-ball player, even though he's never had to. But he's coming here to play with James Harden. He has to understand that's part of the deal. Adding Melo, you're asking two guys to make that adjustment, and it's significant. But I am more optimistic than you are about this fit, because the year after D'Antoni left, I mean, he essentially played small ball four in a D'Antoni offense. It was just D'Antoni was gone. He was doing it for Mike Woodson. And that was one of the best years that he's had from an individual perspective and from a team perspective. And then the other thing is we've seen what he does in the Olympics when he plays small ball four and he's surrounded by other stars who can make plays and he ends up stepping into open threes. And no, he's not a spacer like Anderson. Like, he's not going to have gravity when he's like 35 feet away from the basket, but I think he'll feast on open threes. if he can get them, like, he'll make those shots. And you do have to pay attention. It's not like people don't respect his three-point shooting ability. I don't think D'Antoni's just going to let him stand in the mid-range when Harden has the ball. Like, primarily, the team is still going to just run high pick-and-rolls every time down. And everybody else will be spacing. And he'll still get his opportunities out of that. He'll still get opportunities if... Look, if he's open in transition or in the half court, like, those two guys are going to find him. And his life is going to be a lot easier, and he's going to win a lot more games. So I see the motivation from both sides. Like, I see the Rockets just wanting more firepower, and then I see him wanting to win. So it makes sense to me. Now, there will be, of course, an adjustment period, and I think the adjustment period will be bigger if it involves Melo than if it's just Harden and Paul trying to get used to each other.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I just, you know, they were a really successful team last year is part of it.
Yeah.
They were a really successful team last year. And for Chris Paul, I get it. I get it for Chris Paul. Like, he's a dominant two-way player. And he's an efficient shooter. He's an extremely efficient shooter, which people don't really realize. Paul's one of the best shooters that we've seen over the last 10 years. He's just not in the top five because of the crazy shooting we've seen in the last couple of years. He's also a really smart player, and he's always proven to be, like, he'll take whatever the stuff is. Now, he is going to freelance a little bit in certain situations because he has a lot of confidence in his ability to make plays and win games, and that's where we've talked kind of about that the conflict's going to come in. I just have never seen the same stuff from Melo. I just don't know. Like, I don't know how – it's not a matter of whether or not he's smart, because I don't think that he's ever in a position to have to make smart plays. Like, he just does the same things that he always does. I just continue to really be amazed that there isn't this understanding that, like, look, we've seen this guy for 14 years. Like, for 14 years, we've seen Carmelo Anthony be one type of player. How are we possibly going to believe that he's going to be something different now? Why now?
Because he'd be the third guy. We haven't seen that.
But the difference, never seen that. The difference is with that, in my opinion, I don't believe that Melo's ego is constructed in such a way that he's going to think of it like that. I've never seen him be like, well, they're better players than me. When has he ever said anything like that? Like, he hasn't. He's like, I honestly believe that Carmelo Anthony goes to Houston, he might think that he and Chris Paul are the stars. Like, I could legitimately see that. If he comes in, he says, well, clearly James is our engine, and then Chris and I are here to help him win. Great. That's a good first step. If he plays like that, great. But we don't have any evidence of that. Like you're saying, like, well, we've never seen him as a third star. We've never seen him acquiesce before either. Like, we've never seen him indicate. We also don't know how he's going to react in that situation. Like, that's not a positive. It's not a negative. It's an unknown. We don't know what he looks like as a third star. And you could say, you can reference Team USA all you want, but the NBA is not Team USA for neither Melo nor his opponents. Like, it's just a different situation. And I don't like the comparison because I don't think that you're in the same universe. It's just such a, like, the Olympics are the Olympics. Yeah. Like Europe is Europe and college is college. It's just different. When you're in different environments of basketball, they're just entirely different.
It's different basketball, but I still think you can learn something from how well he's played there over the years and how he's adjusted to having other stars around him. He's always been on teams that were built around him. This is different. And I'm not – look, the trade isn't even done. Like, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Like, I'm not going to guarantee this means, like, the Rockets are the second-best team in the league or anything. But I do think, like, you look at how the Rockets season ended – with James Harden just looking absolutely exhausted after having one of the best individual seasons of all time, it makes sense to me that they're like, okay, we're just going to get a bunch more talent and we're not going to make him do everything and we're going to change this up as great as he is. And they were so good with that formula in the regular season. Like, I'm not sure their offensive rating will be any better. I'm not sure they'll win a ton more games if they do this. Just because statistically, I mean, that was one of the better, I mean, I think it's a top 10 offensive rating season in NBA history. So their defense will probably get better because they have Chris Paul, they have PJ Tucker, like they're a bit more versatile, whatever. But they could be about the same team in the regular season. The reason why I like this, they could. I think they'll be a little bit better, but I think regardless, the reason why I like the changes they've made and are trying to still make is I think it just makes them a higher ceiling team. I think it helps them in the playoffs. I don't think they run out of gas. I don't think they look as one-dimensional as they did against the Spurs. I think the way the season ended was kind of a wake-up call. And they had a great year, but they don't want to go out like that again. Like, it was kind of embarrassing the way they went out. And so they're getting more troops here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope finally signs a deal. 1 year, $18 million with the Los Angeles Lakers. It's a low-risk move for both sides. It's pretty smart. It's reflective of – it's shocking for what we thought the market was going to be for KCP and how it evaporated. It's good that he got this deal for a high salary amount in order to kind of cover up for that. Like, a 1 year, 18 is way, 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 way better than a 2 year, $9 million per year, which nets him the same amount of money. Like, not only is it a short amount of time, but it gives him another year to hope that the market makes some sort of adjustment next summer, which I will say that every cap person I talked to in Vegas has said that's not the case. That not only is the market not going to kind of swing back the other way and there'll be more lucrative deals next summer, it's going to get worse because there are fewer teams with cap space. So he's in a really tough spot. The sports lines projections actually have the Lakers losing wins because of adding KCP on account of his plus minus and the fact that he's not.
Well, advanced stats do not like KCP at all.
Yeah, and he's not a crack shooter. Like his high was 35% last season. That's his highest 3-point shooting year for a guy that's billed as a shooter. Like Jamichael Green shot better from three than him.
Yeah, I think Michael Beasley shot better than three from him. Like a lot of guys did. I still like it for the Lakers. When Chris and I talked about Kentavious last week, I think we both called him like a theoretical shooter or a theoretical 3-and-D guy because the stats don't really bear out what like you think you're seeing when you watch him because his stroke looks pretty. He can play really aggressive and sometimes effective defense. He's long. He's quick. Like he has all the attributes that you'd look for. The production just hasn't really consistently been there. But I do think you put him in this situation in between Lonzo and Ingram, and it just makes sense. Like, he's the kind of guy that they need there. And if he has a better statistical year, if he gets more open looks and he capitalizes on them, because he's a pretty good catch-and-shoot guy, then I think he could increase his value next year. Like, how much that matters when hardly any teams have cap space, I don't know. But I think this is at least a good place for him. It's a good opportunity for him. And for the Lakers, there's no risk at all. I mean, it's not like they have the opportunity to tank next year anyway. So you might as well go for it. You might as well see how it works. Maybe you keep him long term, maybe not. If anything, they just want to be more respectable next season so they can hope to attract free agents in the summer. So if he helps them be a couple wins better, Sportsline doesn't think that'll happen. But if it happens, then that's cool. And he doesn't really get in the way of anybody. I think he complements the roster that they have. It'll be interesting to see how he and Jordan Clarkson split minutes and whatever, but I don't see that as really being a problem.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. Just talk of Clarkson getting moved. We'll see how that shakes out. It's an interesting move, I think, for sure. I think that's about as far as I want to go on it. So how much of Summer League have you watched?
I watched a fair bit. I mean, probably not as much as you because I haven't been there. Sure. But
I spent a lot of time talking to people. It's hard to like once the prospects are off the floor, I kind of like check out a little bit and I'm like doing other things.
Yeah, I mean, my enthusiasm has waned a little with Fultz not playing and Ingram not playing and Ball not playing lately. I think Brandon Ingram that first game that was the best player we saw in all of Summer League. But since then, you know, I've been keeping tabs on the guys that I'm interested in. Jordan Bell with a freaking 5x5 last night in Summer League. That was completely insane. Dennis Smith looks awesome. Donovan Mitchell looks like, I mean, I can't believe the Jazz were able to trade up and get him where they got him. He looks incredible. If we want to do like Summer League overreactions and hot takes, like we can do that right now. I've seen enough.
It's interesting in that, you know, Mitchell's shooting has been poor. Like he scored 37 yesterday, but he's shooting not great. Like, the numbers are pretty poor in terms of the efficiency. And it's summer league. Like, all of this stuff is, it's summer league, so it doesn't actually matter. Like, none of this actually matters. These guys can look like world beaters now and be nothing, and they can look like garbage now and be great. Like, it just, none of this stuff is really, there just isn't a whole lot of reason to overanalyze. You take away kind of like signs and what you kind of see, but like, you know, overall, he's shooting 39.6% from the field. And that's just not good. Like, that's not good. That's not good at all. However, he has looked really comfortable and confident and in control. Like, Dennis Smith Jr. has been the best player in summer league. He has been the best prospect in summer league, at least. In my opinion, it's been kind of very much head and shoulders. That's him, and then Tatum, and then Mitchell are the top three, I think, for players and how they've looked, with Bam Adebayo as a strong fourth option.
Bam, I did not know Bam had all this in his game.
Neither did I. I don't think a lot of us did. Like, I think a lot of us thought of him as, like, just a big. Like, that's all we kind of, like, thought of him as, so.
He's grabbing boards, immediately going the other way, bringing the ball up, and, like doing Euro steps on the break and finishing and shooting jumpers. Like, he looks awesome. And it was from, like, day one of the Orlando Summer League, too. Like, it was right away.
And Akara White has been great for them. Like, the Heat team is surprisingly fun to watch. They've been impressive. Bryn Forbes of San Antonio has been, like, he's averaging 29.3 points per game. Which it seems
feels
good.
Like a too good for summer league guy.
Seems good. Also notable, though, is that because of that, like, it's just kind of funny that, like, you know, Parker goes down, and it's, oh man, what are they going to do? Because, like, Patty's a free agent. Well, they bring back Patty, and so now it's clearly going to be DeJounte starts, Patty comes off the bench, and then Forbes is your third guard in DeJounte's role last season, and you're fine until Parker gets back. Like, the Spurs have no problems at guard. None. They have no issues.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. Yeah, I really think they'll be
they're
fine.
They're just always going to find dudes that can get it done. It's just really impressive that they're able to always kind of dig this stuff out. Wayne Selden has looked really good.
Yes.
I really liked how he's looked for Memphis, which, you know, they've got a lot of talent on the wing now, which is weird to say for a team that's struggled with it so long. But funny enough, none of them still can shoot threes effectively. Somehow they still don't have shooters outside of Troy. You know,
hey man, this could be the year Chandler Parsons gets healthy. I'm not even joking. Like, I'm not even trolling.
Yeah,
like,
it's entirely possible. It's entirely possible. But yeah, Tyreek and Selden and Andrew Harrison.
Like, they have
McLemore. They have a lot of wings, and they do have athleticism. That's the good news. Is like, their defense on the perimeter is going to be really good because they've got so much athletic activity out there. But he's looked really good. Rashad Vaughn has been stellar. He had a really down summer league last year. He's been great, but he's got to show it in season, or we just can't believe in it at all.
Yeah, that's where I am with Vaughn too.
So, oh, that's interesting. I just, as we were talking, Shams from Yahoo, for now, reported that sources, NBA has approved change to its trade deadline for 2017-18 season to the second Thursday before All-Star weekend. So we're going to have the trade deadline and then All-Star.
Wow. Players will love that, because that means if there's somebody's like on the trade block, they're not going to be peppered with a million questions at All-Star. We're not going to see a DeMarcus Cousins situation where they're traded minutes after the All-Star game ends. That's a player-friendly move, so I like it.
It's also a reporter-friendly move, because you realize what this means. It means we get through the deadline, we go into All-Star weekend, we get through All-Star weekend, and then we get 5 days off with nothing to do.
Hey!
Yeah!
We win.
Yeah! That's exciting! That's exciting. Yeah. Like, I'm used to being like, okay, All-Star's over, and now it's trade deadline. Okay, here we go. Like, don't have to do that anymore.
I'll book my vacation now.
That's great. We'll all go on vacation. All of us together. So the reigning topics at Summer League are, where's LeBron going to go in 2018? Because it's just like, everyone doesn't, like, no one thinks he stays. Lonzo Ball. And who's the worst team in the East? Those are the three questions that have been kind of floating around. I did want to kind of get, we didn't get into it the other day. What are your thoughts on Lonzo Ball?
I'm not discouraged at all, honestly. And the thing to me is just that that vision was obvious from that first game. And it wasn't just what he was doing. You were seeing like other Lakers trying these fancy passes. Like Brandon Ingram was all of a sudden throwing these great passes in traffic and like no looks on the break. And I just think that that's what the Lakers were talking about. Like Magic was talking about when he said he wanted a leader. Like I think he's really going to change how this team plays and they're going to move the ball like crazy. It actually, like, in a weird way, made me kind of wish they hadn't traded D'Angelo Russell, because I think they could have worked so well together just because of how quickly Ball just moves it. So, yeah, the three-point shooting in the first game was terrible. And in general, the concerns that we talked about before the draft, that everybody talked about in terms of him being able to get his own shot, those are still there. Defense hasn't been super great, but it wasn't really expected to be. I think he's the same, like, super fascinating prospect that he always was.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit about it today. I've got an Intel report from Summer League that kind of goes down both what I saw and, more importantly, like, what people have said. The most common thing I heard was, he's fine. That's kind of what I heard, which is, if you're a Lakers fan, it seems like an insult, because it's like, he's not fine, he's incredible! And then if you're a hater, it's disappointing because it's like, he's not fine, he's terrible. And that's not really the case on either way. It's like, he's fine. He's a guard that can pass really well. The shot's a real concern. The defense is a real concern. I think there are real limitations. You know, it's interesting that you're as high on him as you are, considering how much you value three-point shooting. Because there is a lot of worries about his shot. And the college numbers, I think, are an interesting debate in that scouts really feel that the numbers at UCLA were not reflective of what kind of a shooter he is. That the shorter range helped him a lot, but that especially in the NBA, where with the kind of coverage that he's going to be facing, he could be really off. And we've seen that.
And he's been really shooting struggled. Deep threes off the dribble his whole life.
And
like deep NBA range
I'm
threes.
Just telling you what they're worried about. Like, if that's, like, maybe you're right. I mean, there's people that say that. I did talk to people that were like, I'm not worried about his shot. The shot's going to be okay. I've heard a surprising amount that they're worried about his finishing. That's another thing that's been weird. And, like, I kind of looked at some of his clips, and it kind of makes sense. He gets real, like, he gets freaked out in traffic. Especially
I think he has to, like, figure out the decision-making aspect of it. Like, when he gets in the lane, there were times he was passing up finishes and instead trying to pass the ball. And I think in college, it's probably easier to get out of those jams and find somebody open on the perimeter. But in the NBA, you're going to have these longer, more athletic defenders that are going to close out, and those lanes just won't be there. And he's going to have to be more decisive about, I'm driving, and once I get in there, like, I'm going to drive this aggressively. I'm going to finish. And I think he should be able to do that, but you're right. Like, that's a concern. And the shooting has not looked great, and that is a huge variable going forward. Like, I'm saying I'm not that worried about it. Like, I think he's going to be a really good shooter in the NBA. But absolutely, if he's not, that's a problem because of the position that he plays.
Right. Yeah, and I think mostly we'll just kind of have to see. Like, that's – the guys that struggle to have that kind of talent, you don't really say, like, oh, boy, they could be really bad. You more go, oh, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, we haven't seen stuff to affirm our beliefs yet. And you could say the same thing about the guys that have been good, that you could just say, like, well, you know, he's been good here, but we'll have to see it. You know, with Jason Tatum, it's like, how, like, the big question with Jason Tatum is one, is he ever going to pass? And then two, like, how is he going to fit in? We talked about that a little bit the other day. Like, you know, how's he going to fit in when into, like, a system? Like, how's he going to adapt? Is he going to, how good is he going to be when he can't just take whatever shot he wants, because he's been taking every shot that he wants in Summer League? He did have a couple of nice passes yesterday, I thought, in the Sixers game. His defense has been a little bit better than I expected. I was really worried about his defense, and he's active, and that's all I really care about. As long as you're active, I don't really care how good you are. You can be fine defensively as long as you give effort. Like, the only guys that are bad on defense are guys that aren't talented at defense and don't care. And
right.
And that's the only combination that leads to guys that aren't good.
I liked how you wrote, like, what's going to happen when he's the fifth or sixth best scorer on a team. Like, how does that work? Like, we don't know. And the one thing I keep asking myself is I'm, like, reading all this stuff about Tatum, and I'm watching Tatum, and I'm enjoying it, but I'm also having the same questions as everybody. Like, how is this going to work in the league? Why does it seem like he has to do this much to get his shot off? Like, why is he taking all these contested shots, blah, 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 blah? Thinking, like, well, like, if, like, Summer League Kevin Durant was playing now, or Summer League Carmelo Anthony was playing now, with the way that the game has changed and the way that analysis has changed, like, what would we say about them? Like, would we be criticizing the degree of difficulty of their shots? Would we be saying they need to pass more? Like, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know how to judge this, because he's out there playing like a superstar. We know he's not going to be a superstar in his first year, but maybe that's where his ceiling is. Maybe in 4 or 5 years, he's one of the top, like, 3 or 4 scorers in the NBA. Like, that does not seem out of the question when you look at his footwork, his feel for the game, just the way that he's able to make those tough ones, and the fact that he's shooting threes as easily as he seems to be, which was a little bit of a question. Like, I think the ceiling is really high. The question to me was always just like, okay, if he's not transcendent, then how good can he be? Because it's hard to play that style if you're not incredible at that style. So I'm not sure what the Celtics have. I'm gonna have a lot of fun watching this, and I think it was obviously a really bold move to trade down and take him and then declare that you would have taken him number one. But if he actually realizes his potential, if he's this kind of player in the NBA, then, like, you can't fault that.
Then I'm moving to another country to get away from the Celtics fans, because their smug will just swallow us all. It'll just destroy absolutely all of us. We will be destroyed by a dominant vein of that. So, what else we got? What else is going on?
The news is kind of slowed down, right? Like, Ron Baker got a contract that doesn't make any sense. Dwayne Dedmon went to Atlanta for some reason. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
I'm like trying to find Kevin Durant's Summer League stats now online.
I just remember after Kevin Durant's rookie season, people comparing him to Jamal Crawford but taller, and I was just like, let's just keep some perspective here and not overreact to his, like, percentage.
In 2007, Marcus Banks averaged 42 points per game in summer league play.
Legend.
Amir Johnson in 2007 led all players in rebounds with 12 per game. Your guy.
And still kicking around.
And the assist leader for the 2007 summer league, DJ Strawberry. DJ Strawberry, oh, wow. The Phoenix Suns. I thought DJ was going to be good. I love DJ Strawberry. I thought he was going
to
be good.
The first time I went to Summer League, he was playing. That was 2010. That guy had a few go-rounds in Summer League.
Sad. Oh, hey. There's this article from Summer League. It's from the Wages of Wins Journal. And it's the headline from Summer League is, Durant disappoints again.
Right?
Durant managed to capture only 8 rebounds and 137 minutes of playing time in Vegas. Over the past 14 seasons, 99% of all NBA players rebounded at a rate better than this. He also scored 0.73 points per field goal attempt, a mark that was bested by 96% of all NBA players since 93-94. In sum, Durant couldn't rebound and he couldn't shoot. Given these two activities will define much of his NBA productivity, observers of Durant should be quite disappointed.
Yep. I mean, there was a legendary summer league game where Greg Ostertag dominated Tim Duncan. Derrick Rose famously had a really bad summer league, and after the first couple of days, people were talking about, well, how the hell didn't Beasley go number one? Look at how well he's playing in summer league, because he was killing it. So, yeah, I mean, take all of this with a grain of salt, obviously. I still love summer league. I love watching it. I think you can learn a few things. But, yeah, I mean, to write off guys or to say, well, this means the pick was absolutely great. Like, even though I kind of did that with Donovan Mitchell, I don't care. Generally, you shouldn't do that.
Generally speaking, you shouldn't do that. Okay, so we're waiting on the Melo trade. Other than that, so what's your summer look like? What are you doing in the summer? It's time for us to start dipping into other things to get us through the rest of the podcast. What are you doing this summer?
I don't know yet. I haven't booked vacation time yet. I'm supposed to go on a honeymoon in August, but I don't know where we're going yet. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll be around.
I'm telling you, Greece. Go to Greece. Greece is where we go.
It's on the list.
Greece is where we go.
We have to, like, sit down and actually go through the... It's weird that, like, such a fun thing is, like, actually kind of stressful. Because, like, we've known, like, August is the time we're going to do it because there's nothing happening in basketball. But...
Which means Mel is definitely getting traded in August.
No, sure. That's got to... Have it happen today, please.
I'm flying today. Don't do that to me. I gotta get home.
That means you'll get out of it.
No, it's gonna happen. It'll happen in the next 2 days because I'm supposed to be off. I'm supposed to be kind of away because I gotta help the wife out since I've been gone and she's had the kids at her mother's. So I'm supposed to come back and like help out. And so clearly, what will happen is he'll get traded. And I'll have to be like, I have to do that, and then she'll just be fuming and mad. and that'll be a good time. So. Nerlens Noel was at Summer League yesterday, by the way. He was sitting with the Dallas Mavericks. He sat next to Rick Carlisle for most of the game. He was getting hugs and high fives from the Mavericks staff. Tim Cato of SB Nation reported that a deal is, quote, not close, according to a source close to the situation. So they're still working on it, but it wasn't – the vibe there was not – there was no acrimony. Like, it's pretty clear that
– He's going to come back. It's just a question of money, right? Like – from the Mavs' perspective, there's not much incentive to offer him the max if like nobody else is going to give it to him. That's probably what he wants. So, like, do you do a short-term deal, like everybody seems to be doing, or will Nerlens accept something that he thinks is like a little less than he should make, but to get the full, you know, long-term deal that he wants?
Right. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast here from Vegas. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. Please hit us up. I am at Matt Moore CBS or at HB Basketball. James is at Outside the NBA on Twitter. Please let us know your questions, your comments, your ideas. We'll have more podcasts coming both this week. We'll have another one on Friday, and we'll have more throughout the season, summer season. Lots of stuff. Obviously, we'll have an emergency pod if Melo winds up in Houston, which, again, is a terrible idea that no one should want to do. James, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Matt.